is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I'm a student of the game, and I'm kind of old school, so every day I go to work, I'm writing in my journal, I'm taking notes, I'm sitting down, I'm talking to coach, I'm figuring things out with him. I'm also talking to each staff member that's in charge of their area, whether it's being an offensive coordinator, an academic coordinator, someone that's overseeing our budget. All these things are preparing you to lead your own program, and that's important to me. That's the reason why I'm here. And that's what I want to be. I want to be a head coach one day. So you have to be around people that's going to allow you to grow into that situation.
Jermaine Kimbrough is the men's basketball associate head coach at Arizona State University. He joined head coach Bobby Hurley's Sun Devil staff in the spring of 2021. Kimbrough spent the previous two seasons at Loyola of Chicago and the three prior seasons at the University of Wyoming. Before heading to Wyoming, Kimbrough spent one season at the University of Nevada. He spent the bulk of his career at Cleveland State University, where he served nine seasons as an assistant coach under Gary Waters. After graduating from Virginia Tech, Kimbrough moved right into the coaching ranks, first serving as an assistant at Howard College from 2001 to 2003, before moving on to Cleveland State as director of ops. After a season at CSU, he spent 1 year as the director of operations at Massachusetts, and then one season at Purdue Fort Wayne as an assistant coach, before returning to Cleveland State. Kimbrough began his playing career at St. Catherine College before transferring to Virginia Tech, where he played two seasons before graduating with a degree in psychology. He was a prep standout at Shaker Heights High School in Cleveland, earning all-league honors on four occasions and all-city accolades three times. As a senior, he was named second-team All-State after pouring in 26 points per game. Hey Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Clint Pulver, the author of I Love It Here, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
3R Basketball, powered by Under Armour, is coming to Cleveland this fall. Get your 3-on-3 team together and register at ua3rbasketball.com. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Grab a pen and paper as you listen to this episode with Jermaine Kimbrough, men's basketball associate head coach at Arizona State University. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, but I am pleased to welcome back to the Hoopheads pod Jermaine Kimbrough, associate head coach at Arizona State University, for his second appearance. Jermaine, welcome back, man.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
We are excited to have you. Yeah, absolutely. We're excited to have you back on and definitely looking forward to diving into the changes that have taken place for you since we last talked. You were at Loyola of Chicago with Coach Porter Moser, and now you are at Arizona State with Coach Bobby Hurley. So let's start there with just how the opportunity comes to you at Arizona State and what life has been like going from Chicago to Arizona.
It's been great. It's always a challenge. And, you know, anytime you take a step up, you know, from mid-major basketball to the Pac-12 is always a challenge with so many different entities that go on in college basketball. But you know, I figured it out. And, you know, I've been prepared. I've been trained the right way. I've had a lot of great coaches to learn under. Most definitely felt like Coach Moser is, you know, he helped me. He helped train me to get to this level, to be able to be an asset for Bobby Hurley. And getting here, this is going on my second season, and man, it's been great. You know, Coach Hurley's a competitor, and he, you know, his track record speaks for itself. You know, I can't, and I've been doing this for 23, 24 years, and Coach Hurley's one of the best I've been around. His pedigree, you know, his background, his track record, he's a two-time champion, NCAA champion, and seven pick in the NBA draft, and to the Sacramento Kings. And I've learned a lot from him since I've been here at Arizona State. Fortunately enough, he believed in me enough to name me the associate head coach to continue to help him grow this program in the right way. And but it all started for me at Loyola Chicago. You know, when I left there, we went to a Sweet 16. I had a chance to work with some great individuals, Matt Gordon, Drew Valentine, who's the head coach there now at Loyola Chicago, Pat Wallace, and London, Coach London there. He, you know, I learned a lot at Loyola Chicago, and it was a great experience, and it was one of the best programs I've ever been a part of, and had a pleasure to coach him. And anytime you can bring that experience over to where your new spot, like here at Arizona State, man, it's been great just trying to get these guys to buy in and believe in what we're teaching them. And you know, it's a challenge. You know, we didn't have a great season last year, but it was a learning lesson. We finished up with 14-17, but that's life, right? Like it's peaks and valleys, and you go back to the drawing board, you figure it out, and you draw from experiences from the past. And it's been great, man. It's been great to work with the guys that I work with now. Brandon Rosenthal, Nick Irvin, Justin McClain, Coach George, it's been awesome. And, you know, the most important thing about these experiences is you get to go to work every day and work with guys that you truly care about.
Did you have a relationship with Coach Hurley prior to getting to Arizona State, or how did you get connected to him, if not?
Well, I always tell people it's not what you do, it's kind of who you know, who wants to help you. And, you know, for me, you know, being in the business for a long time, you know, you kind of just got to let your work speak for you. And no, I did know Coach Hurley in passing, by name, by face, or saying hi to him in the recruiting trail. But, you know, in this profession, it's about who you are as a player, as a coach. And I'm a character coach. And for me, just taking care of the business, taking care of my business where I'm at every single day, allowed me to have this opportunity, and being connected, treating people the right way, showing up every single day, doing my job, has been great. And that's the reason why I got here, because of my track record and my body of work.
When you look at the season, you mentioned coming off a season at 14-17, and then you guys are sitting down in the coach's office in the weeks after the season, and you're starting to look at what do we need to do? How do we need to approach this? When you talk about your off season and you think about trying to get your team to where they need to be prepared for this season, what do those meetings look like as a staff? What are some of the things you guys are talking about in terms of here's what we need to accomplish over the summer, both from an individual player development standpoint and from a team cohesion standpoint?
For us, you know, when you go through this process and you break down what's important, I think it starts with the mental piece, especially in today's game. The summer was long hours, and we sat around and we talked about the mental health of every individual in person that's in our program, because it's not about the basketball, it's between the ears. And, you know, when you think about the modern day athlete, what they have to go through every single day, is different. is not how it was 20, 25, 30, 40 years ago. It's something that we all got to make an adjustment to. And it's a different way of living. It's a different way of life. And how you develop your team right now is not really just on the basketball court. You got to spend so much more time with developing the mental aspect of the game with these young men. You got to be connected. You got to be able to communicate. You know, you got to be consistent. It's just so many other different things that go into it nowadays. It doesn't have anything to do with basketball. And these young men need to know that you care about them, that you're willing to go through a brick wall for them, because they have so much information. And if you think about it, their way of communicating now is through social media. And that's where they get their identity from. So if you're an old school coach and, you know, you're used to a young man that's going to run through a brick wall for you, you know, back how they did when, you know, Coach Knight was around and, you know, Gene Katie, it's not that era anymore. It's almost like it's these young men and young women, they want to know, are you going to run through a brick wall for me too, coach? You know, they want to know, they know everything about your contract. They know everything about your family. You know, they know so many, they got so much information that it's not about you anymore. It's about them. And it's about, where can you help me and how can you help me and where can you get me? And I think as coaches today, as modern day coaches, we got to understand that the world has changed with the NIL, the collective, these young men, these people. I remember playing college basketball at Virginia Tech and I had to find my next meal. And you know what? I didn't complain. I didn't complain about it, Mike. I just,
yeah, you weren't signing any deals back then, man.
No, I wasn't signing any deals. I just had to figure it out. Like, and I just had to figure it out. Nowadays, you know, everything got to be lined up. You know, as a coach, you got to make sure everything is lined up for these young men. It's not that this is a softer generation. I just think they got more resources. They don't have to go through what we went through. So we got to train them a little bit different than the way we were trained. And I think once coaches realize that, I think we'll be in good shape. So those meetings were just really about, you know, how can we help our culture? You know, how can we help develop these young men into being better people? The community that's around us, who do we have that is another voice outside of just the coaching voice? Having a sports psychologist in your program, a nutrition, you know, someone that can come in and talk to them about just taking care of their bodies, just different voices. So all that plays a part and is prevalent in today's game. And you need that. You need the resources to allow these young men to express themselves, to believe in themselves, and to be comfortable within who they are as people.
For you as an assistant coach, when you're thinking about what you guys do in the summertime, obviously there's workouts that you guys are doing on the floor, but you mentioned some of the things that you're required to do in order to be able to build those relationships with guys off the floor. So what does that look like in the summer? I think people have maybe at least some understanding of, hey, we're getting guys out on the floor. We're trying to develop them. We're trying to improve them as individual players, which is obviously going to help our team to get better. But what are you doing as an assistant coach to build those relationships during the off hours in the summertime where you're getting a chance to just have conversations and build that relationship with the kids that are part of your team?
You know, for us here, you know, just helping young men get to class and, you know, meeting them in the weight room, meeting them in, you know, in the training room, meeting them in the study hall room, spending time with them in the office, you know, going to visit them in their apartments, in the lobby area. I mean, going to grab lunch with them, you know, all these little different things, these nuances that, you know, that's very minute. People think they're minute, but they're very big. And that's something that, you know, on the court, we spend a lot of time with our guys on the court, getting them better because that's what they want. They want to get better. You know, a lot of these guys are hungry to play at the next level. And, you know, we spend a ton of time with them on the floor. We within the rules, but we take that time to try to develop that relationship so it was authentic and organic and transparent to make sure these guys know we care about them. And it starts on the basketball court, and it kind of trickles down to the, you know, personal life, you know, asking questions, the right questions about, you know, who they are and who they family, you know, talk about their family. I mean, it's so many different ways to connect with them through FaceTime, through Zoom. You know, it's so many ways to connect to these guys. We got to continue to find ways to connect to them, because that is the reason why we have jobs, right? Like, we got to take care of them. We got to make sure they okay. They are in our presence, and we're kind of like the last line of defense. And for us here at Arizona State, we spend so much time with our guys in the summertime, in the fall, the preseason, in the season, probably more so, you know, than we do on the court, you know, just being in our office, talking to us, walking the halls. So any chance we get to bump into them and talk to them, we do it.
There's three things that when you think about where college basketball is today and you think back 5 years ago, even, that they were things that coaches, players wasn't probably even on their radar to any degree. And now you guys have NIL, the transfer portal, and social media. So let's take each one of those one at a time, and just how you guys at Arizona State, what you're doing, how you're handling that, how you're helping players to navigate it. Let's start with social media. How do you guys work social media? How do you use social media? How do you help your players to use social media to make sure they're doing it in a positive way?
Well, we educate them. We want to make sure the right content is going out, and we want to make sure that we are a part of that too, because as coaches, sometimes that social media piece doesn't mean a lot to us. So you got to entrench yourself into their world, and we follow them. We make sure they have the information and the content to go out. So whatever they need, that's going to allow them to, you know, that's their life. That's their livelihood. It's like the first thing they do when they wake up in the morning is to pick up their phone and see if they got likes, followers. And, you know, what's crazy with this, you know, with everything is that's how they continue to make money, right? That's
right,
how they
exactly.
Like, it's really a job. It's that's how important those social media sites and apps are to them. They that's how they make their money. That's how they get extra money. That's how they pay for things. That's how they promote things. They promote themselves, their brand. And what we've tried to do is bring people to the table that can allow them to express themselves, but also educate them and let them know that the promoting, the marketing, and the branding is way more important, a positive influence on social media, because when you look at the social media, you can get a lot of negativity. And then just teaching them how to filter through the DMs, the direct messages, and what to listen to and what not to listen to. And to also run that by us as coaches, that's where the relationship piece come in. You know, we want to know what's going on in the social media world with you.
Yeah, I can't imagine being a player and having to navigate all that. And you think about players getting messages and, hey, you have a great game, great. You have a not so great game and you don't want to go in there and check. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's one thing that, you know, back in the day when you and I were playing and maybe your roommate said, hey, man, you stunk tonight. And you just take that and move on. But now you're getting it from all different angles. And I think it's the same way for kids at the high school level and younger. And just there's no escape. They can't get away from it because, as you said, they're connected to their phone. They're picking it up all the time. And I think you said the key word, I think, is being able to educate the players about what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing. And then again, what should they be looking at and what they should not be looking at, what they should be able to ignore. And I'm sure that that's a constant conversation that you guys have with them to make sure that they're on the same page with what you guys are trying to get accomplished with them. And obviously they want to be able to, as you said, utilize that to be able to make money, which is a whole different set of circumstances than anything that any coach or player in the NCAA has had to deal with in the past. So where are you guys with NIL in terms of feeling like you have a pretty good handle on what it looks like? I mean, I know everybody's still kind of feeling their way sort of through the dark and trying to figure out what this whole thing is going to look like. But where are you with, in terms of your comfort level with NIL, and then where are you with the players?
You know, for us, again, you know, we can only do so much with our guys, but we give them the freedom to try to go out and do what they need to do with the NLI. It's a space that I think everybody's continuing to grow with it and to try to figure it out. And we got young men in our program now that they got NLI deals, and they're figuring this space out, whether they got car deals or bike deals or grocery deals or, you know, whatever deals they got. We give them the freedom to try to figure it out and to help them, because we know how important that is, you know, for today's generation to be able to promote that social media wise. It's tough. It's a tough field because, you know, it all depends on where, you know, we try not to make that. We try to make the main thing the main thing, right? Like the basketball piece is still the most important thing.
For sure.
We try to make these guys understand, like, we're going to help you, but the main thing is being here for basketball, being on a basketball scholarship, and getting you better and preparing you for the real world. And it's unfortunately that, you know, I tell parents this all the time, the professional athlete now is probably from the age of 15 to like 22.
Yep.
It's not like when I was growing up, you graduate from college, you become a professional athlete. No, these young people are, you know, striking million-dollar deals now at the age of 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19, 20. And then when they get to college, it's the same thing. So their professional career is starting at a young age. So you got to be prepared for that on a day-to-day basis. And that's why I think universities going forward need to have someone in place that can actually filter, guide, and direct families and young people and student athletes in the right direction when they get to campus. So as coaches, we don't have to necessarily deal with something that's probably not your expertise, right? Like we could talk to them about it, but we can't really truly be there, you know, every second, every minute, every hour of the day and filter through all the marketing deals or any NLI deals. So they can bring us the information, and then we got to, you know, we got to channel it to the right person. But it's tough. Because at the end of the day, I'm a basketball coach.
You're not an agent. You're not an agent. Come on.
I'm not an agent. I truly don't want to deal with it. I'd rather watch film with you. I'd rather get on the floor and help you develop your ball handling, your shooting, your passing, and, you know, understanding the plays. But it's something that I truly don't. It's not second nature to me as a coach.
How far away are we from pretty much every Division I school having an NIL person who's in place within the athletic department to be able to at least assist the athletes and the coaching staff in working their way through that? Do you think I got to think we're probably pretty close to getting to the point where that's almost going to become a prerequisite, that athletic departments are going to have a person in place.
I think we're maybe a season or two away. I think once they kind of figure out the new alignments of the schools and the conferences and get things in place and, you know, kind of filter out what, you know, what's real and what's not real and what's here to stay and what's not here to stay. I think we're about a season or two away from that.
Yeah. It's hard for me to sort of wrap my head around the whole fact that guys in college have this opportunity. It's a great opportunity. I think it's something that probably is long overdue. And yet at the same time, I would imagine for you guys as college coaches that being able to navigate one more thing that you talked about trying to build, you know, your culture. And so you have this situation where guys are getting different levels of NIL deals. If I'm this player X and I'm a starter versus I'm the eighth man versus I'm the leading scorer versus I'm the leading rebound. There's just, I would think it just adds a whole nother layer of things that maybe don't necessarily cause problems, but just things that you have to kind of keep an eye on and make sure that you're on top of sort of those dynamics amongst the players when it comes to this NIL stuff.
Well, we're professional coaches now, so we wear many hats. We are agents. We are agents. We are coaches. You know, we are, you know, we give these guys so much information. It's an overload. And what gets lost is the basketball piece. And, you know, we for us here at Arizona State, I don't know how, you know, other universities do it, but, you know, ours is very mild right now. Like we're trying to make sure everybody is fed. We're trying to make sure everyone gets equal opportunity. Right. And so, you know, we don't want to put ourselves in jeopardy with, you know, I mean, we can't control if someone has 100,000 followers versus someone who has 1,000, someone who has 1,000 followers. Right. Like we can't control that. But, you know, when it comes down to the collective and, you know, my philosophy behind it is I think you should try to make sure everyone has equal, just about equal across the board. So you don't have any issues in your locker room, your culture. So everybody can walk out every single day and say, hey, you know, I have enough to survive in college. And because that's what college is. It's a springboard to get you to your professional level, whether it's sports, education, business. It's you're here to be a student athlete. And I think we can't forget that.
Yeah, there's no question about that. That, as you said, you got to keep the main thing, and you got to keep the players focused on, hey, you're here to get an education and you're here to play ball, get better, improve, and prepare for whatever your career you're going to end up having, whether that ends up being a professional basketball career, whether that ends up being something else entirely in the business world or wherever you end up, where you end up going. And I think sometimes we get a lot of these conversations and you find out that there's all these ancillary things, but ultimately, why'd you get into coaching, right? Because you love basketball. You didn't get into that so you could negotiate NIL deals for guys and check out their social media account. You want to dive in, you want to help them to be a better basketball player and get involved in that piece of it. And so I think that's something that is really critical when you start talking about making sure that the players have the first thing. It's right at top of mind. It's got to be, hey, I got to focus on my studies and I got to focus on basketball and this other stuff. Yeah, there's time for it, but I got to make sure that I, as you said, keep the main thing. And then the last piece of it, we talked social media, we talked NIL. The transfer portal is clearly something that has had an impact across the landscape of college basketball. Talk to me about, we hear a lot of negative things about the transfer portal. Talk to me a little bit about what you see as being the positive. Let's spin this positive. What's a good piece of the transfer portal in your mind as a college basketball coach?
I actually love it. I was a JUCO coach, so I'm kind of used to it. The portal for me was, I've been doing this for 23 years. And when I was in the junior college ranks, we had a new team every year. And it was just, so I would, you know, for me to get a new team every year, I actually think it's pretty good because, you know, I don't like the recycle piece of it where people or players or student athletes try to move on because they're unhappy with not earning what they think they deserve. But I think that's the downward piece to it. But to be able to rebuild your program in a short period of time, you know, if you lose three seniors, you can replace them with three seniors. Someone who's logged a lot of minutes, someone who has a ton of experience. So you don't have to truly, I still think you got to develop your young players and get them prepared and ready to play at this level. But I also think it gives you the opportunity to not have a down year as much as possible because you're so used to, you know, remember how college basketball was. It's like, hey, if I'm young, I'm going to be down a little bit this year because we got a young group. Well, you don't necessarily got to be young anymore. You know, you can, you can filter in and you can bring in older pieces, older players that can kind of keep you older and able to compete at a high level. And I truly believe it's a great asset to college basketball. I'm not overly concerned about it. I never really looked at it as a bad thing. I always looked at it as an opportunity for, you know, you to stay old and get old and keep developing your program. I just never looked at it as a negative. I thought it was, I love the transfer portal, man. I love the relationships you get a chance to build. And it's not a 4-year commitment. It's almost sometimes either a 2-year commitment or a 1-year commitment.
Those guys, certainly you bring in some upperclassmen that have college basketball experience. And you think about in the past when you're building your program and you bring in an 18-year-old high school kid, and regardless of how good they are as a high school player, there's still an adjustment to college basketball. There's still guys that never make that adjustment and don't end up being as good a college players as maybe people thought coming out of high school. Whereas you look in the transfer portal and you've got guys who are proven commodities at the college level. And so I would think from a coaching staff standpoint, the positive of that is you're bringing in guys who have already adjusted, adapted to the level of play in college. They've already adapted to being away from home. They've already adapted to the academic piece of it. So clearly you got a more experienced player and you're just bringing in somebody who has a lot less risk, right? Somebody who's already done it versus a high school kid where you might think, hey, they can do it, but until they do it, you're never sure. Whereas with these guys in the portal that are coming in, they've already played college basketball and already demonstrated they can do that. That's where I see, as you said, that's a huge advantage to be able to keep the continuity of your program in terms of that age and having an experienced team out on the floor.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you spend so much more time on basketball than you do, you know, trying to make sure guys are going to class.
Right, for sure.
You guys already know they got to go to class and study hall. And
right.
You know they got to eat 3 meals. They kind of already know how to gain weight, lose weight. They kind of already been through it a little bit. They know their bodies. They know exactly what they need to do. They get to the gym early. They know they need to stretch, get a sweat going before a coach get out there. So it's almost kind of, it's just reprogramming them, you know? So I think that's the most important thing for us. It's been great. We've had some great transfer in over the last 2 years since I've been here at Arizona State. And you'd be surprised what they know, how to play, you know, what they're looking for offensively and defensively. They kind of know how to take care of themselves off the court. You don't have to talk to them about taking care of their bodies and treatment and ice and cold tubs and hot tubs and massages. They kind of already got their routines figured out.
Yeah, that's got to be a huge advantage in terms of just being able to build a team year after year and having those kinds of guys be a part of it, again, as opposed to having to do a little bit more hand-holding like you have to do with players who are freshmen that are coming in that haven't gone through and done that. So as you guys are putting together and figuring out how you're going to go about coaching your team, what's Coach Hurley's philosophy on dividing up responsibilities among the staff? So you as the associate head coach, what are some of the responsibilities that have been delegated to you? And then how does it break down across the rest of the staff?
Oh, I think Coach Hurley does a great job with, you know, growing his coaches and giving them responsibilities all the way across the board. He's second to none in my eyes. That's why I love working for him. I've grown so much as a coach, as an individual, but just with the responsibilities and delegation that he's given me within the program. But he gives you so much freedom. He's not a micromanager, but he's one of those guys that want results. So you got to figure out how to get the results. And you might have to come up with your own game plan, but you got to get the results done. And that's been a blessing for me and my growth. You know, for me, I as a coach, I handle a lot of the defense and, you know, kind of oversee, you know, what we do on the floor practice wise every single day, just kind of like an overall overall view of the program, whether it's dealing with scheduling, budget, academics. You know, I kind of got my hands in everything, but we kind of delegate and put a leader on each one, a coach on each one. So one coach will have academics, one coach will have the budget, the scheduling, camps, and then we kind of just meet every single day, you know, 2-3 times a week on just where are we at with everything. And he gives us the freedom to kind of figure that out and then present something to him on a weekly basis. So, it, you know, being here at Arizona State, I've grown so much because he's given me the freedom and the ability to go out and try to figure things out on my own as a coach.
Is there one thing or multiple things that you can point to that you've been able to do or have a hand in here at Arizona State that maybe you hadn't been as involved in at some of your previous stops?
If, you know, for coach, he's kind of given me the total control over the defense. Like, it's kind of my philosophy, right? It's kind of like, not necessarily his philosophy, but he's like, hey, you got total control over the defense. You know, what you put in is what we're going to do. And that's total freedom. And so that means it's more on me than it is on him, because it's not his philosophy, it's mine. So, you know, so when you're given that kind of, you know, responsibility, you take pride in it. And you want to make sure it's right, because someone believes in you to get the job done, and you want to make sure you get the job done. You know, meeting with administration, the trust factors to meet with administration, the recruiting aspect, you know, maybe doing a home visit by yourself, meeting with parents, someone to give you that type of trust within your program is the ultimate trust factor for any assistant coach when your head coach believes in you that way.
When you look ahead in your career and you start thinking about, and again, I know you're not trying to get out, but just as you think about the possibility of eventually becoming a head coach, how valuable will be the experience that you've been able to have here at Arizona State to be the associate head coach, to have that total control over the defense, to be able to have your hand in all the things that you've talked about? Are you taking notes and writing things down and making sure that you're trying to maximize every bit of knowledge that you can, so that if and when you get that opportunity, you'll have that stuff in place and you'll really have thought through the process of, hey, when I'm a head coach, these are the things that I need to make sure that I'm doing.
Correct. Now, Mike, I'm a student of the game and I'm kind of old school. So, you know, every day I go to work, I'm writing in my journal. I'm taking notes. I'm sitting down, I'm talking to coach, I'm figuring things out with him. I'm also talking to each staff member that's in charge of their area, whether it's being an offensive coordinator or academic coordinator, you know, someone that's overseeing our budget. You know, all these things are preparing you to one day lead your own program. And that's important to me. That's the reason why I'm here. And that's what I want to be. I want to be a head coach one day. So you have to be around people that's going to allow you to grow into that situation. I take notes. I keep notebooks year in and year out, you know, from offense to defense to culture to player development to academics to budgeting to scheduling to, you know, what we do on recruiting visits, what we do on home visits, you know, the community, the classroom, boosters, donors, you know, you get a chance to check off so many boxes sitting in the seat as the associate head coach that is preparing you. And all you have to do is take advantage of the advantage. And that's keeping notes, mental notes, written notes, just knowing exactly what you need to do. So when you do get your opportunity to be a head coach, you can take that opportunity and run with it. So I think right now it's preparing me, you know, to be able to lead a staff meeting with Coach Hurley or without Coach Hurley. That's important to communicate within the staff, to know what to look for within your staff, what's important to you. as a leader. All those things are important. And at the end of the day, what I've learned over my 23 years of being an assistant coach, that it's human to human relationships, it's communication, it's how you treat people. And I think the most important thing too is giving people that you work with a vision, right? They got to have a vision, they got to have a plan, and then they got to have action. And over the last few months, you know, I'm an avid reader, and you know what I think is important. I call it the three A's. I think attitude, atmosphere, and action is vital for any program. You know, when you think about attitude, that kind of falls under culture, that falls under who you are every single day within your culture. You know, to me, culture is every day, but attitude is every day. Having a positive attitude every single day and not worrying about things you can't control, but just get the job done. Then I think you got to create an atmosphere for everyone to be successful in, right? You got to have an atmosphere where people can grow, they can develop, they can trust, they can love, they can care for one another, they can communicate, and not just the coaches, but the players. And I think if you have the right atmosphere for young people to come in and also adults. And when I say that, I'm talking about, I think in today's world, we talk about mental health in so many different ways. And I'm an advocate of that. And I understand where that falls under with atmosphere. So you have to have people that feel loved and trust. They can trust you. They feel like they can grow under you. They feel like you're working for them. So atmosphere is important to me. And then, you know, lastly is action. You got to have action. And what I mean by action is you got to have everyday guys that's willing to work. Student athletes, coaches, administration, everything has to be aligned up. You got to align everything. So those A's mean so much to me. And I'll say it again. You got to have attitude, you got to have atmosphere, got to have action, and you have alignment. And I think if you have those four A's, you're bound to win. You're bound to be successful.
When you think about those experiences that you've been able to have as the associate head coach, and let's take the on the floor coaching piece of it off the table, because I know that would be your number one thing. That's what every coach, that's the most fun part of the job. And we all know that you don't spend nearly enough of your time as far as percentages doing that on the floor stuff. But when you think about some of the things off the floor that you see either that Coach Hurley has to do or things that you are doing as part of your role as the associate head coach, is there something, one or two things that you really like that stand out to you that are sort of not on the floor things, but things that you enjoy doing that are a piece of what it means to be eventually a head coach? So something that's not on the floor, an aspect of coaching not on the floor that you like?
Yeah, I think for me, Mike, it's relational, right? Like it's, you know, when I got into this business, it was really about relationships. Now it's kind of more transactional. And for me, I'm not a transactional coach. I'm a relational coach. I'm a transformational coach. So when I touch a young person, whether it's, you know, a young lady in terms of like just talking to them on a day-to-day basis, or a young man within my program, anybody that I encounter, I want to make sure it's transformational. Like, man, I love to have a sit down with the young men that's in our program. Because I care more about where they're going to be 40 years from now than they are going to be 4 months from now. Like, I want to make sure that when they come into our program and they get a chance to know who I am, that I transform them. I help them. I develop them as a person. I give them a game plan, a map for the rest of their life. So the basketball piece is there, but more importantly, I want the relationships. And I say this all the time. If I don't get an invite to your wedding, I haven't done my job, you know, and I want those young men to be able to call me back and be like, Coach, man, I appreciate everything you did. You helped me, You know, I was struggling when I was 18, 19, 20, 21. But you know what? You stuck with me. You communicated with me. You, man, you put a note in my locker that changed my life. You took me out to dinner and you talked to me. And you know what? That day it changed me. You know, I had an opportunity to talk to a young man, you know, just about just life in general. You know, what it's like to be a functional adult, what it's like to be a husband, what it's like to be a father, you know, what it's like to be a mentor, what it's like, you know, talk to them about their finances, you know, what's important in terms of investments, what's important in terms of savings, you know, so we're not just basketball coaches, we're life coaches. And I look at this, my opportunity here at Arizona State as an assistant coach, I'm a life coach more so than I am a basketball coach. I'm into changing lives. Coach Hurley is into changing young people's lives. And he gives everybody in our program the opportunity to be a life coach. And that's the most important aspect to me.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. All right, let's talk about being your own life coach and the transition of moving your family from Chicago to Arizona. You got a wife, you got kids. They all have lives that they've built up in the various stops and places that you've been. So when you have to pick up and you have to move, and I know you and I talked about it before we came on, just about the fact that your family is allowing you to pursue those dreams. But just talk a little bit about just in general that how you have to have a family that's supportive, and then maybe talk specifically about this move from Chicago to Arizona and how you guys have adjusted.
Oh, I mean, again, you know, I know we talked about it a little bit, but and I'll say it again, I've been blessed to have a wife that I have who supports me, who believes in me, who allows me to live out my dream every single day and don't question it. I'm very fortunate. And, you know, not only does she allow me to do that, she educates my family, my kids and my children on what I'm doing. And she's a life partner and she trusts me and my decision making. And it's worked out over the last 23 years. But I gotta say the reason why I'm where I'm at today is because of my family. You know, my 9-year-old son, he's like, oh, dad, you know, I met a lot of nice people here. I love it here in Phoenix and I love it in Tempe. I love the weather. I don't know if I really want to leave. I love the swim pool. And, you know, I love going outside and being able to play basketball. And I was like, so he's like, well, we're not going to leave here. And I was like, well, I mean, you just never know. I mean, what if, and he's like, well, if you get another job, I understand. But if you don't get another job,
this is a good spot to be, huh?
This is a good spot to be in. And, you know, when they start getting into that age, Mike, where they kind of have their own life and they kind of got their own rhythms going and their own routines and they're going to basketball practice and they got school and they got friends and they spend a night over their friend's house. And I mean, that's kind of hard, you know, as a coach, as they get older. It's easy when they're younger, but when they get older, it's kind of hard to just pack up and move. And for me as a coach, the life that I've chose and the career that I've chose, you know, this is, you know, I remember one time I had to live without my family for a year and that was hard. I was like, I'll never do that again. But, you know, as coaches, we sacrifice so much to be able to take care of our families. And, you know, but if you don't have the right mindset, if your wife don't have the right mindset, And you know what was really good? My wife is now connected with other wives in the business. So they got like a wives club. And actually, we had about 60 wives in Phoenix this past weekend with the Nation of Coaches. And those wives get a chance to share. See, because our college wives and professional NBA wives or whatever, they live a different lifestyle. It's not a 9-to-5. So they kind of got to go through some bumps and bruises or, you know, last minute letdowns. You know, I got to go recruiting this weekend. I know it's your birthday, but I didn't know I had to go recruiting. Now, all of a sudden, I got to go recruiting and I was supposed to take you out to dinner on Saturday. Is it possible that I can take you out to dinner on Monday? And if people don't truly, if you don't have a wife that truly understand that, it's hard to get through this profession. I've just been blessed to have a wife to say, oh, you know what? We can go out on Monday. Monday, Saturday, Sunday, it don't matter. Just as long as you take me out. But it's not a lot of coaches that probably have that supportive wife. But I think the most important thing is my wife has found a coaches club, wives club, where she can be a part of and they can kind of share, talk, fellowship and hang out with each other because they kind of live the same lives. Their stories are the same. So I think that's important that you are connected as a family, but also connect your family to your business and what you're doing to your career. You can't have two. This is a hard business to separate family and career. You know, so my wife and my kids, they come to the game. They know my players. They stop by the office on the weekends. You know, all that stuff is important. They come on recruiting trips when they can. They are part of the recruiting visits. When families come in. So all that stuff is important. If they don't feel a part of it, it's hard to, you know, be a leader of your own family if they're not a part of who you are in every day. Because, Mike, I'll be honest with you, I spend more time with the coaches in our office than I do with my family. So I got to love the guys I work with. But more importantly, if I need to leave at 5 o'clock, I'm blessed to have a boss that understands, hey, your son has a game at five o'clock today on Saturday or Sunday, or hey, go take care of that. You know, Bobby Hurley's been really good with that. And that's the reason why I love working for him, because he puts family first. He's about the right things. He's passionate, you know, about his family. He's passionate about your family, and he's not going to allow you to miss a family function for something that he can change in the schedule just to make sure that, you know, your family's happy and taken care of. And that's why I love working for them.
Absolutely. How long did it take for you guys to feel like Arizona's home? How long does that process take? You've obviously done it a couple times. Just what does it take to make it feel like home for you and the family?
You know, to be honest with you, when it's January and you get pictures of 12 inches of snow,
feels pretty good, right?
It feels pretty good when, you know, it's 82 degrees on Christmas Day and you outside riding bikes and everything. And, you know, Arizona is a great spot. But at the end of the day, you know, what makes it feel like home is the people that you're around. And it's human to human relationships. And it's the time that you spend with other people and with your family that makes it special. And if you can't have great human to human relationships with your coaches and family members, your wife, your kids, then you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
How long, to go along with that, you talk about building relationships with your coaches on your staff, and obviously you're helping to build relationships for your family and get them into school and get your wife connected and all those kinds of things. But there's also, on the business side of it, you have to go out and you're in a completely new geographic area and you're leaving behind your contacts that you had when you're in Chicago or when you're at the University of Wyoming or when you're at Cleveland State. You've built relationships with the high school coaches and AAU coaches in those areas. So when you come into a new place, how long does it take you to be able to start to build those relationships? And what's the process like for you personally to go out and make connections with high school coaches, make connections with AAU coaches, and start to build that network that obviously you need to be able to recruit?
For me, it's just, you know, the people that you already connected to, they connect you with someone that they know. The power of one. I always call it the power of one. And it takes one person to tell another person about who you are as a person, your character, and they connect you to that person. So you kind of, you're looking for those connections. And, you know, when I coached at Nevada, it was probably the first time I was really out on the West Coast, and I really got out and met a ton of people in California, Las Vegas. I really worked the phones. And when I was at Wyoming, I did the same thing in that area. And then being back in Arizona, right now, you know, recruiting is a little different, right? Is right now is more about phone conversations, FaceTimes and Zooms. And you can see people now and you can talk to them. It's not like when I first got into business where you were kind of territorial, like you kind of had to know everybody in Ohio or right. everybody in Illinois and Michigan. You know, there's no reason why you can't be a national recruiter now, right? Like you should know everybody because it's the opportunity for you to know everybody is at your fingertips. You know, so it's not like, you know, 23 years ago when I first got into business, there was no reason for me to talk to anyone in California or Las Vegas, because that just wasn't the game at that time. It was more about, you know, take care of the young men in Ohio, Illinois, Michigan, your breadbasket states. Nowadays, you can get a kid to go, you can get a young man to leave New York City and surpass all the Big East schools to come out and play in the Pac-12. It's just connections. It's just getting on the phone and talking. Selling your program, selling your head coach, and you have to have genuine relationships, authentic, organic relationships, and you got to keep your nose clean as an assistant coach. You got to be transparent, and I think you have to be real, and you have to tell people the truth. You got to be honest, and you have to treat people the right way. And I think once you treat people the right way, that positively spreads too. Not just being negative.
What are some things that when you sit down, and obviously you got to get to know Coach Hurley, you got to get to know the type of player that he likes to coach. That's one thing that I've heard consistently across a ton of episodes on the podcast, talking to coaches at all different levels, especially assistants, saying that I've got to get to know the type of player that is going to thrive underneath my head coach. And I've got to understand what kind of player he wants to coach. So when you think about the profile of a player that's going to succeed underneath Coach Hurley, what does that profile look like? And obviously there's a skill set that a player needs to have in order to be able to play at your level in the Pac-12. But just when you think about maybe some of those intangible things, what's Coach Hurley's type of player? Who are you looking for when you're out there on the recruiting trail?
I mean, to me, I think it's very, for coaches, it's easy because when you look at Coach's track record, when you look at Coach Hurley's track record, you know, he's a two-time national champion. He won a state championship. He won a national championship in high school. He's a winner, right? And for Coach Hurley, he wants winners. He wants competitors. He wants toughness. If you watch Coach Hurley play, I mean, he was tough. He was competitive. He wants guys to be able to sustain condition. He will condition athletes. And I mean, to me, it's very simple. I love working for him because we kind of got the same philosophy on what we're trying to find and what young man that we're looking for and for our program that fits him in the program. And that's toughness. We try to go out and find young men that's competitive, that want to be here at Arizona State, that want to be coached the right way, that want to be coached with toughness and tough love. And I think and that's hard to find nowadays, Mike. Like it's hard. It's not like it's a lot of young men out there that fit that description. So we got to kind of turn over every stone. We try to find young men that play with a chip on their shoulder, something to prove, you know, to everybody. So when coaches out there looking at, you know, potential student athletes, he's looking at guys that's tough, you know, that play physical, that's mentally tough, that want to be at Arizona State, that wants to play for him and have the same fiber and DNA that he had when he was a player, and that play with that fire, and that wants to win at all costs. And that's who Coach Early is, and that's how he wants his teams to look when you face them. He wants teams to say, that was the hardest playing team that we played against all year.
Is it easy to identify that with the amount of experience that you've had? Is it easy to identify that if you're watching video, or do you need to see a player in person to really be able to pin down the fact that, hey, this guy's physically tough, he's mentally tough, he has that chip on his shoulder? Is that something that you feel like you need to see a kid in person? Is that something that you can identify easier than maybe in the past through film? Just what's your thought process on being able to identify those characteristics and pick those out in a particular player?
Well, it's probably a little bit more trickier today than it was 20 years ago, because we didn't have a lot of film, and we didn't have a transfer portal, and we didn't have, you know, there's so many people involved in this game, whether it's scouting, whether it's scouting services, whether it's recruiters or AAU coaches that you can kind of talk to. You know, we had to really, you know, when I first got into it, you got into this business, you had to go, you went to go see kids seven times to play.
Right.
You talk to the cafeteria worker, you talk to the gym teacher, the academic advisor, the guidance counselor, the history teacher, the basketball coach. If he played multiple sports, you talk to the baseball coach. And it was a long process. Nobody wanted to commit early. Nobody wanted to kind of, you know, put out their top three and get things done. Or it was a process. And right now the process has trimmed down to the point where everything is sped up. The evaluations are sped up. So you got to truly be careful on, you know, what you're looking for. And I think you still got to go through the process. You just got to speed it up, because, you know, when you think of transfer portal guys, that might take a week, maybe 3 days to get a commitment from a kid, because he kind of already know what he wants to do.
Right. Right.
So, you know, in 3 days, you got to talk to the parents, the coach. You know, you got to call the coaches in the league to find out, you know, any information or intel on the young man that you can get, because you just don't know. And for me, I'm gonna always go back to the way I was brought up, and I got to do everything with my own eyes. I got to be able to. I would like to just to sit down with the young man and just talk to him face to face. You know, when you think about the COVID era, when those 2 years where it wasn't any visits, and you had young people committing to universities to go play, but they never visited the university or the coach. They just did it over Zoom and they watched film. And that's hard.
That's crazy.
That's hard to recruit a kid just off film. And we had to do that. And then all of a sudden you realize, like, it's not a good fit. It doesn't look the same. So I'm a firm believer that you have to see everybody with your own set of eyes. You can't believe what somebody else say. You got to see it with your own set of eyes.
All right. Let's say here now you got guys in the fold and you brought in your recruits, and now you guys got your team. And obviously we talked a little about what you've done over the summer, and now you're into preseason practice. When you guys are breaking down things in practice and somebody walks in to watch Arizona State go through a preseason practice at this time of year, what does it look like in terms of who's leading the practice, how it looks? You mentioned again that you're taking care of the defense. So when I'm assuming when defense is the focus, there's a lot more of you leading that phase of practice. But just break down for us, what does a practice look like in terms of what are the roles of each one of your coaches on the staff?
Well, we're breaking that down. You know, we got We have coaches that's dealing with offense. We got coaches that's dealing with, you know, the nuances of the game, whether it's the first three steps in transition, offensively and defensively, rebounding, shell positioning, high hands on the catch, communication. You know, we consider ourselves a two-way program, but the one thing you will see with us is energy, you know, energy, toughness, fast pace. Like, we want to get up and down, a lot of conditioning, a lot of pace and speed, that you will see in our program. You will see our coaches just involved and engaged with the practice as the players. So our coaches come with a lot of energy. Our coaches are talking in practice. So, you know, we practice what we preach, and that's important to Coach Hurley. Like, Coach Hurley's an everyday guy. He's going to bring it. The competitiveness is going to come out. And if things aren't done right, on time and done with energy and toughness, you're going to hear about it. When you walk into our practice, you'll see an offensive coach, a defensive coach, and then you'll see guys that kind of handle special situations, whether it's baseline out of bounds, sideline out of bounds, late clock. But then you also see leaders. We got leaders in our program that we call coaches, players that we call coaches, that's helping the guys stay locked in, engaged, for, you know, because in the preseason, you go about 45 minutes. So that's kind of short tempered. Now you're going 3 hours, 2.5, 3 hours. So your attention span got to be there. And so you got to be locked in for 3 hours. And that's what you'll see within our program.
When you're talking about developing those players as leaders, what are some of the things that you're talking about with those players that you've identified as leaders within the team to be able to help them to step into that role and make sure that they're leading? I don't want to say in the right way, because everybody has a different way of leading, but just what kind of guidance are you giving those coaches on the floor, so to speak, in terms of your players? What guidance are you giving them to help them to be even better leaders?
You know, body language, you know, speaking first. You know, I don't always got to be a coach to confront, confront or speak up. Like, it can't always be the coaches that's going to bring the energy. Like, where's your energy at? Where, you know, are you holding somebody accountable today? You know, are you here today? Are you present? Are you locked in? Are you helping your teammates get better? Are you talking to your teammates? Are you building them up in a positive way? You know, are you holding guys accountable? So those are the little things that you will hear us talk to our leaders about, our older guys, our vets on the team. Hey, man, where you at today? You know, somebody missed a box out. I shouldn't have to say something to them about missing the box out. You should hold them accountable. So that peer-to-peer relationship, and, you know, just kind of coaching everybody through that, like, whether that's our managers, our GAs, our freshmen, our sophomores, our juniors, our seniors, our fifth-year guys, all that's important. And we try to coach is real good at allowing freshmen to come in and coach and talk. If that's who you are, that's who you are. You know, we give you the freedom to be who you are as a person, but also give you the confidence to step in and be who you are and help coach the team.
Compared to when you started, and you think about the summer workouts and what you guys are able to do with your players on campus over the summer, and now we're very, very early here as we're recording this in preseason practice, where you're coming in and you're trying to get your team prepared for the first game. How much further along are you on day one of official practice in the year 2022 compared to in the year 2000?
Oh, way, 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 way ahead. We're so far ahead. It's crazy, because you put a lot of that stuff in, and, you know, in June, July, and August. And then now you in September, October, all you're doing is kind of reviewing and polishing up and adding layers to to your identity offensively and defensively. You're just adding layers to it. But I think the hardest piece now is maintaining in the being healthy, like their bodies, because now you can kind of wear guys down quickly. Because you're going all summer. You know, when I first started, we would start up October 15th. And then you got 3 weeks to get ready for a game. And then you do tour days and you kind of put things in on Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday night, come back Sunday. You know, you're getting ready for this game. And then all of a sudden, you know, they make these new rules. And now you're sitting here in the summertime and you're doing skill development, you're doing defensive work, individuals, you're doing offensive work, individuals. And now when you get to August, September, your team kind of already know your offense. They already know what you're doing defensively. So now it's just review, but more importantly, it's just taking care of their bodies and don't burn them out.
What does that look like? So how do you guys talk about or think about making sure that you're keeping players fresh? Because I think about my own experience and I'm not sure that keeping anybody fresh was ever on anybody's mind back in the late 80s, early 90s when I played. And obviously things are so much different now, but how are you guys going about figuring, hey, here's where maybe we need to take a step back, or here's where we can go a little bit harder? Is that trying to get a feel, talking to guys? Is that part of the training staff that's actually coming to you with data? How do you guys go about making sure that you keep your guys at a peak so that when game time comes, they're at their absolute physical best?
You know, I read something today and it said, get them to the game, because we got so much time with them now. Your job as a coach is to get your guys to the game, to be healthy and to get them to the game. And that's the most important thing, right? Like, that's if you're practicing and you've been practicing since June, July, August, and all the way up until November, that's a long time. And your job as a coach is to make sure they're ready to play and be fresh, so you can't burn them out, right? You can't burn them out. You can't you can't put so much wear and tear on their bodies mentally, physically, that to the point where they're not ready to play a game on the first day. Like, they can't be so burnt out that they're not ready to step in and perform at a high level. And I think the biggest thing you need to have is the conditioning program, your strength coach, the fuel in their bodies, making sure they're eating 3-4 meals a day, getting proper sleep. And then more importantly, being in the training room, making sure they're getting in the cold tub, hot tub, ices, massages, whatever you got to do to keep their bodies healthy at 100%, you got to do it.
What about on the mental side in terms of the mental fatigue? I know one of the things that I always think about, Jermaine, is the amount of time that you guys spend together in the summertime. And obviously you're spending an unbelievable amount of time together during the season. And as you said multiple times, right, you want guys that are coming into your program that want to be coached, that want to be coached hard, that want to be pushed. And so they're hearing your voices. They're hearing your voice. They're hearing Coach Hurley's voice all the time. And then you look at, okay, in the summertime, used to be 15, 20, 30 years ago, guys could sort of step away from the game and go home, and maybe they do their own thing and they're working to get better, but they're not, the coaching staff didn't have the same access to players that you guys have today. So how do you guys handle that mental side of it to make sure that, I guess what I think of is, man, I'm not sure I would want the same staff harping at me for 11 and a half months out of the year. It feels like without taking a break, that sometimes that could wear on guys. So how do you guys think about that or talk about that when you sort of design what you're doing in the summer and the preseason, and just sort of looking at the entire calendar to make sure not only you're keeping them physically fresh, but you're keeping them mentally fresh and making sure that they're juiced up and ready to go when the season gets here?
Yeah, I just think you can't make everything about basketball. I think you got to make it about you know, you got to have some fun, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, whether that's going, taking them to Top Golf, whether that's going bowling, whether that's eating at coach's house, watching, you know, watching games and, you know, family dinners and, you know, dinners with coaches and, you know, maybe even, you know, a head coach would say, hey, you know what? I'm going to let my assistants handle the skill development piece. So they just don't hear my voice every single day. So that gives the assistant coaches the opportunity to go out and work with the guys. Or maybe it's just one coach to go down there for 1 week and then the next week is another coach. So it's so many different ways to kind of get where guys don't get burnt out from one person, whether that's the head coach or assistant coach. I just think it's different ways to do it. But for us here, we try to make our summers fun, about them, about getting them better. Sometimes we do small pods, maybe 2-3 players, and we get them guys better. So we might be on the floor for four hours every single day, you know, four times a week, just getting our guys better in small groups. So they don't get caught up into, hey, man, it just seems like we've been doing team practices and it's the same drills. So we just try to have fun in the summertime. So when they get to the fall, it's strictly about the team.
All right, two questions around game prep. When you guys are practicing the day before a game, what do those practices look like in terms of what you're actually doing? And then in terms of the time frame, how long you're practicing on that day before the game? And then same thing on day of the game, shoot around, walk through. What's the philosophy there? So day before the game and then day of the game, what are some of the things that you guys are doing that maybe coaches out there that are listening can maybe incorporate some of the ideas and thoughts that you guys use at Arizona State into their program?
For us, we don't go a ton. We don't go a lot of time on the court. We maybe an hour 15, hour 30 at the most. And we kind of just go through what we call identity drills that gets us ready for the game. What's the staple of your program? Is that shell defense? Is that transition offense? Is that, you know, closeouts? Is that rebounding drill? You know, what's your staple? What's your identity drills that you can go to that your guys know that's going to prepare you as a coach and your program and players to get ready to win a basketball game? Sometimes it's not really about the opponent. You know, it might be a day where the day before the game, you need to talk to them a little bit more depending on how the last game went. So you got to be flexible within your program. It can't be the same thing. You know, sometimes it's not just getting out on the court and just, you know, throwing up the ball and figuring some things out. Sometimes you got to sit down and talk to guys individually, you know. And I think that's called feel. And I think that's called coaching and understanding your players and in today's game that it might not always be the same. So I think it's predicated on, you know, the vibe and the energy of the gym with your players and what's going on in your program. I think that's, as a leader, you got to decide what's the best thing for your program today. Is it practice or is it getting to them mentally? Because if you think about performance anxiety, I'm a big believer of that. You know, a lot of, you know, when you start thinking about social media and these kids, you know, these players are being attacked or they didn't play good the last game, you might not need to practice. You might need to really sit down and have a mental one-on-one session with someone and meet with your team as a collective, as a group, and also individually during that practice hour, just so they are ready to play a game on Saturday. And then you might come in on Saturday morning and kind of walk through, visualize, watch film, you know, talk to them again and get ready to play. And then some days you might go out there and do a full walkthrough where, you know, you got everybody's healthy, everybody's ready to go. We don't have no issues. We can get through a good walkthrough. So I think really it just comes down to, if I was a head coach, it would be, how do I feel about our team and where we are at this particular time in this moment? And I would develop a plan based off where this team is at right now.
Yeah, getting to know your team and having a feel for the pulse of where they are in the given moment, both mentally and physically, I'm sure then that allows you to adequately prepare them and make sure that you're getting things together.
Because I've been doing this for so long, I've seen coaches have walkthroughs and lose. I've seen coaches have no walkthrough and win.
For sure.
So yeah. There's just so many different ways to doing it. You know, I thought one of the ways I always liked doing is what we did at Loyola Chicago. The day of the game, it was never about, you know, going out there and going up and down. We talked it out. We talked out what the game plan was defensively. We talked out what we were going to do offensively versus this team on both ends of the floor. And it was more of a mental approach than it was getting a sweat and getting up shots.
That visualization piece and that mental piece, clearly you've mentioned it a couple of times, and anybody who's paid attention to basketball in the coaching profession understands at this point how important being in the right mental frame of mind is heading into a game and just being confident. And we know we forget sometimes, especially when you're talking about Division I college players, especially at a big time program like Arizona State. These guys are on TV all the time and there's people coming up to them and everybody knows who they are. And sometimes we forget, right, that they're 18, 19, 20 year old kids that are still kind of trying to figure it out. And they're still trying to go to class and they're still trying to, you know, figure out what's going on with their girlfriend and what's going on back at home with their family. And they got a roommate that's doing this or that or whatever it might be. And sometimes I think we forget that they're young kids. And as you said, I think getting a feel for your team and your players and understanding what they need in the given moment, that's really what coaching is all about, right? It's an art. There's things that you can plan for and things that obviously you have to be prepared for, but at the same time, being able to understand and adjust to the moment to be able to give your team what they need when they need it. To me, that's one of the most important skills that any coach can have.
You know, one of the things I say, Mike, to our guys, what's going on in your life today? You know,
yeah.
You know, anything going on in your life that is going to prevent you, your 100% focus, what's going to prevent your 100% focus? You know, it's a way to allow people an out and how to balance the need for their personal time. Like, you know, we don't know what's going on in their life. We don't know what's going on back home. So that's why I always ask a guy, hey, man, what's going on in your life today? You good? Because I think if you start putting the ball back in their court, they'll tell you what's going on. And then as a coach, you got to inform your staff and your head coach, or if you are the head coach, now you kind of know what's going on and you can kind of prepare practice or a workout. And you might even say, you know, I tell people all the time, it's okay for a young man to miss a workout nowadays. I mean, it's not like how it was in the old days where you get 3 weeks to prepare and you can't miss a workout. Now it's like, I mean, what's one or two workouts, you know, going to hurt a young man to go get his mind right, go get himself right. And I think it's important that you educate your players that way and that, you know, some people might need that extra day. Everybody's different. You know, everybody mental space and mental health is different. So, man, nowadays it's hard to be a head coach because you it's not just the old school run through a brick wall. you know, everybody show up on time and be here and go through it 3 hours a day, you know. For 9 months, it's not that anymore. You know, it's so many other factors that go into it that you got to be skeptical of, because it can come back to bite you.
Well, it used to be right that it was, you're going to do this, and if you don't, then you're not going to be around. You're not going to be a part of it. And you do it this way, not because I explained it to you or not because I'm telling you it's in your best interest. You're going to do it that way because I said that's the way we're going to do it. And as you've said many times with today's athletes, that way, one, I don't know how effective it was even when it was being used. I'm not sure that we couldn't have got more out of athletes doing it the way that we do today, but certainly the way we do things today. And just as you've mentioned, the resources that programs have from the high school level all the way up to the level where you're coaching, where there's just so much more awareness of the science, the nutrition, the mental health, all these things that really were not a huge factor even 15 or 20 years ago. And now we've become so much more sophisticated. And as you said, you think about the number of hats that you have to wear as a head coach, as an assistant coach, and all the things that you're having to deal with, from social media to NIL to mental health to just building a relationship and getting to know a kid and making sure that they're in the right headspace to be able to perform at their best. Man, it's a lot on your plate on any given day to be able to manage all that and do all that. And that's why, again, you're working 12, 14, 16 hour days to make sure that you're giving your players everything that you have and giving your team the best opportunity to succeed. And you as an assistant coach, that you're doing right by your head coach to make sure you're being able to support them in any way that you possibly can. Let me ask you this as a final two-part question. When you think about the next year or two for your program at Arizona State, what do you see as the biggest challenge within the program over the next year or two? And then the second part, when you think about being the associate head coach at Arizona State and working for Coach Hurley, what brings you the most joy in what you get to do every day? So the biggest challenge ahead in the program over the next year or two, and then the biggest joy that you get from what you get to do day in, day out.
Well, I think for the biggest challenge for us is being consistent, consistent winner. Coach Hurley's went to you know, three straight NCAA tournaments and had three, you know, straight winning seasons out of the last 5 years. And COVID hit and some things happened within, you know, the program. People, you know, I think 1 year they probably had their starting five only play a total of three games together through that tough spiel. And, you know, you have young men that, you know, went straight to the NBA, one and done guys, and, you know, guys transferred. And so it's not the same, you know, it's different because you don't know who's coming, who's going, you know, you don't know. It's not like you have a team that you're going to have for 3 to 4 years. So you got to figure that out, and you got to be consistent in your approach, in your culture, you know, what you're teaching. It's good to have consistency with players, bringing in 3-4 year guys that's going to be with you for the next 3 to 4 years and try to stay old. And I think all that has to do with consistency and your recruiting, consistency within your program and retention. I think all that's important. And then that's how you have sustained success. So I think our biggest challenge is, trying to limit the revolving door that everybody is going through in college basketball. And the best way to do that is you got to fight for your culture and your student athletes every single day. You got to have a relationship. So I think over the next 2 years, the biggest challenge is being consistent with that. And then my biggest joy is I get to go to work every single day and work for a boss that I care about, I love, and that I learn from, and that I know he cares about me and wants to see me grow, but not just me, our whole staff. And it's easy to work for somebody who's a competitor and wants to win at a high level. And it's easy to take that because he's done it. It's easy to listen to what he has to say and believe what he has to say because he's done it. He's won a national championship. He was a lottery pick. So he's coached and played at the highest level. And I think that's a joy to learn from every single day. I mean, when you look up point guard in the dictionary, his name is by it. You know, so just being around, I think, Mike, we call him living trophies, right? Like, yep. He's a living trophy, man. He's the Bobby Hurley. And I mean, I remember growing up and watching Duke play, and I get a chance to be around that guy every single day. That, you know, that I think we all at some point admired Coach Hurley in his play at Duke. We kind of still remember the UNLV days, the Michigan, you know, just sure. Everything. Yeah. So we remember those games. So that's a joy within itself. But more importantly, I find joy in helping people. So when I get up, I get up to go help our student athletes every single day.
Well said, Jermaine. Well said. Before we wrap up, I want to give you a chance to share how people can reach out to you, find out more about your program at Arizona State. So if you want to share social media, email, website, whatever you want to. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Oh, for sure. They can reach me via Twitter. I always like more followers on Twitter now. So I'm getting close to 6,000 followers.
You can get your own NIL deal, man.
Yeah, I know, right? I can get that to 10K. I always give everybody my Twitter handle and say, follow me on that. But
there you go.
My Twitter handle is, you know, at Jermaine, J-E-R-M-A-I-N-E. K-I-M-B-R-O-U, all one word. And again, I'll give it to you again, at Jermaine, J-E-R-M-A-I-N-E, K-I-M-B-R-O-U, is all one word. And they can also email me, Jermaine.Kimbrough@gmail.com, Jermaine.Kimbrough@gmail.com.
Jermaine, great stuff tonight. Excited that you were able to come back on for a second time. Put you in an exclusive club of two-timers here on the Hoopheads pod. Appreciate your time. Wish you nothing but the best of luck this season at Arizona State. I know you guys are going to get it turned around and get it going and have a great season there, you and Coach Hurley. So, again, good luck. And to everyone who's out there listening, we appreciate you being a part of the Hoopheads pod audience, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
3R Basketball, powered by Under Armour, is coming to Cleveland this fall. Get your 3-on-3 team together and register at ua3rbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.